Have you ever thought about what happens when, like, a huge event just completely rocks a community? Like, how does our justice system, try to make sure things stay fair for everyone involved? I mean, take the Boston Marathon bombing, for instance. That was just, I mean, emotions were so raw. And right in the middle of all that, there was this really big legal fight going on about the trial of Joe Kartsarneyev. Specifically, should that trial even have happened in Boston in the first place?
And that's the heart of what we're looking at within Ritsarnaya.
Okay.
You know, it's not just about this one case, as awful as it was. It's about this really big idea, the Sixth Amendment,
Right.
this right to have an impartial jury,
Right.
which is like a foundation of our whole legal system.
Yeah.
And it's actually surprisingly hard to get a trial moved because of worries about bias.
So to help us really understand this, we've got some fascinating stuff to work with today. We've got the actual court decisions in the Tsarnaev case itself, plus some really insightful analysis from legal experts. We're going to try to break down the main points for and against moving the trial, okay? We want you to see how the courts use these legal standards, especially in these high-pressure situations, and we want you to see why the judges had such different takes on things.
Yeah, and by the time we're done, you'll have a good grasp of just how rarely courts actually agree to change the venue, especially when it's a really high-profile case.
Yeah.
And we're also going to dig into jury selection, which is, like you said, called voir dire. And can it actually guarantee that you're going to have an unbiased jury, especially when a whole community has gone through something so traumatic?
Okay.
So the big question we want you thinking about is this. Can you actually find a totally unbiased jury in a city that's been so deeply affected by something horrible?
Right. Right from the beginning, Tsarnaev's lawyers had this huge challenge in front of them. They were arguing, and it's not hard to see why, that after the bombing, the media coverage was so intense and so emotionally charged, And then you've got this Boston Strong movement, which was so powerful. They were saying that all of that together had basically made it impossible to have a fair trial in Boston.
Right from the start.
It wasn't just like, oh, it might be a bit tricky. They were saying this is a straight-up obstacle to having an impartial jury.
And it's really important to get this.
Yeah.
They didn't just mention this casually, you know.
Yeah.
The defense team filed formal motions with the court asking to change the venue.
Right.
They saw how likely it was that there'd be bias in the jury pool in Boston, and they were using all the legal tools they had to address it.
Okay, so here's where things get really interesting. When the trial court said no to moving the trial, Tsarnaev's lawyers did something pretty unusual. Not once, but twice, they went to the First Circuit Court of Appeals and asked for something called a writ of mandamus. Okay, so for those of us who aren't lawyers, could you break that down for us? What is a writ of mandamus? And why is it like a last-ditch effort in the legal world?
Well, you can think of a writ of mandamus as kind of like pulling the emergency brake in the court system. You know,
Okay.
it's an order from a higher court that tells a lower court, hey, you have to do this specific thing. And you don't see it very often. It's actually pretty rare.
Wow.
Legal folks, they often call it a judicial fire alarm.
Okay.
You only pull that alarm when there's a real crisis, you know,
Yeah.
or if the lower court is clearly abusing its power.
I see.
So in the Tsarnaev case, they were basically going over the trial court's head and asking the First Circuit to force them to move the trial out of Boston.
Gotcha.
And what makes this even more interesting is we're talking about the second time they did this, and this was while they were already picking the jury in Boston.
So for the First Circuit to actually pull that fire alarm, Tsarnaev's lawyers had to show them something really serious. Okay. It wasn't enough to just say, hey, we think it'd be more fair somewhere else.
No. The courts have these very strict rules about what you have to prove to get a writ of mandamus.
Okay.
There are basically three big things. First, you have to show that you have a clear and undeniable right to what you're asking for. Second, you have to prove that you'll be seriously harmed if you don't get it,
Okay.
and that this harm can't be fixed later on through a normal appeal.
Gotcha.
And third, you have to show that there's absolutely no other legal option for you. So in this case, the First Circuit said very clearly they didn't think Tsarnaev's team had proven all of that. They called it a Herculean burden, which tells you a lot.
So there's this phrase you hear a lot when talking about moving trials, and that's presumption of prejudice.
Right.
Can you explain what that really means in the legal world?
Sure.
And how did it connect to what Tsarnaev's lawyers were trying to do?
So presumption of prejudice is basically this.
Yeah.
In some really extreme cases, the court will just assume that there's been so much negative publicity and so much feeling against the defendant in the community that it would be impossible to find unbiased jurors.
Wow.
No matter how hard you try during jury selection.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Courts almost never do this.
Really?
They generally start by assuming that people can be fair, and it's up to the defendant to prove otherwise.
Hmm.
So this presumption is really only for those super rare cases where the publicity isn't just a lot, it's also really inflammatory. And it's just everywhere in the community.
Yeah.
To the point where finding an impartial jury seems practically impossible.
So how does a court decide if this presumption of prejudice actually exists?
Yeah.
It can't just be like a gut feeling, right?
No, not at all. They have specific factors they look at.
Okay.
One is the size and type of community where the crime happened.
Right.
Smaller, more tight-knit communities tend to be more deeply affected by a tragedy.
That.
And the publicity that comes with it compared to, say, a big, diverse city.
Right, right.
They also look at how much pre-trial publicity there was and what kind it was.
Okay.
Was it mostly factual news reporting? Or was it sensationalized and meant to stir up emotions?
Yeah.
The amount of time that's passed since the crime and the trial is also important.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes those really intense feelings in the community can cool down over time.
Right.
And finally, they look for any actual signs of bias during jury selection.
Okay.
This means looking at the questionnaires and the questions that the lawyers and the judge ask potential jurors.
Okay, so in the Tsarnaev case, most of the First Circuit judges looked at all these factors and said, nope, it doesn't add up to a presumption of prejudice in Boston.
Right.
But like we said before, not all the judges agreed.
Yeah.
There was this really strong dissenting opinion.
Yeah, that's a key part of this whole thing.
Okay.
Judge Torruella, he wrote a very powerful dissent.
Uh-huh.
And he had a very different perspective.
Okay.
He argued really strongly that because of what Boston went through after the bombings, the jury pool would almost certainly be biased against Tsarnaev.
Mm.
He was particularly worried about potential jurors having personal connections to the bombing.
Yeah.
Maybe they knew someone who was hurt or killed, or maybe they were directly affected themselves.
Right.
He also talked about this feeling in Boston of being a terrorized community.
Yeah.
Saying that this made it basically impossible to be truly impartial.
Wow.
Judge Torruella went so far as to say that this was a textbook case for changing the venue.
Hmm.
Exactly the kind of situation where the court should have presumed prejudice.
So the majority, though, they seem to put a lot of faith in the jury selection process itself, the voir dire.
Right.
Can you walk us through what voir dire actually involves?
Sure.
And why did the majority think it could work, even in this highly emotional situation?
So voir dire is all about questioning potential jurors to find out if they have any biases. And in the Tsarnaev case, the court really emphasized how thorough this process was.
Okay.
They had over 1,300 potential jurors fill out this detailed 100-question survey.
Wow.
All designed to uncover any possible biases or connections they might have to the case.
Okay.
And after that initial screening, the judge and the lawyers from both sides got to ask each potential juror individual questions.
Okay.
The idea is that through all this questioning, you can find and remove anyone who's too biased, to be fair.
Uh-huh.
And the majority of the court was basically saying that this careful process of voir dire was the right way to handle potential bias.
Yeah.
Instead of doing something as drastic as moving the entire trial to a different city.
Okay, so why were the First Circuit judges so against stopping the jury selection that was already happening by granting this writ of mandamus?
Yeah.
It seems like if they were really worried about bias, putting things on hold might have made sense.
Well, they had some big concerns about interfering with jury selection once it had started.
Mm-hmm.
They were worried about setting what they called a dangerous precedent.
Okay.
If higher courts were always stepping in and stopping trials in the middle of jury selection just because there was a disagreement about the location,
yeah,
it could cause a lot of delays and chaos in the system.
Right, right.
There's a general rule in law against what they call piecemeal litigation.
Okay.
That's the idea of trying to appeal different parts of a case before the whole trial is even finished.
Yeah.
And courts usually try to avoid that for efficiency's sake.
Right.
Plus, the court also pointed out that even if Tsarnaev was found guilty in Boston, he could still appeal the verdict later.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue of the venue and any potential bias in the jury could be fully reviewed by a higher court.
Right.
So they were basically saying that granting the writ of mandamus at that point was too early.
Yeah.
And that it was interfering with the trial court's job.
That makes sense from a procedural standpoint.
Right.
But you mentioned that Judge Torruella, who wrote the dissent, he had some strong words about that reasoning.
Yeah, he really did.
What was the main point of his argument against the majority's decision not to pause things for the mandamus?
Judge Torruella basically said that the majority was out of touch with how intense things really were in Boston after the bombings.
Mm-hmm.
He argued that the trauma and emotional impact on the community was so deep that you couldn't just ignore it or deal with it through regular jury questioning.
Yeah.
He was worried that even if people said they weren't biased, there might be these hidden, unconscious biases at play.
Right.
Coming from that shared experience of the tragedy and this whole Boston Strong narrative.
Yeah.
He said that in a community where everyone knows someone affected by the bombing, the chance of finding a truly impartial jury were tiny.
Mm.
No matter how much questioning they did.
Wow.
He also said that by going ahead with the trial in Boston, the court was actually hurting public trust in the fairness of the justice system.
So this case really highlights a big tension in our legal system, right?
Absolutely.
We're always trying to balance a defendant's right to a fair trial.
Yeah.
Especially the right to an impartial jury, which is in the Sixth Amendment.
Right.
With the practical side of trying these high-profile cases,
mm-hmm.
and of course the community's desire to see justice done locally.
It really makes us think about what's better for a community that's healing after a tragedy.
Yeah.
Is it better to keep the trial related to that tragedy in that community?
Right.
Or should the top priority always be making sure the defendant gets the fairest trial possible?
Yeah.
Even if that means moving the trial somewhere else.
Right. And in Tsarnaev, the majority clearly decided to trust the local court to choose a fair jury.
Yeah.
But Judge Torruella and the other judges who dissented, they were really worried that the emotional impact and the community's feelings in this case made it almost impossible to avoid prejudice. So for anyone listening who's especially interested in the legal details, what are the big lessons from In Re Tsarnaev?
Yeah, especially for law students, this case has some important insights.
Okay.
First, it shows just how unusual and difficult it is to get a writ of mandamus.
Uh-huh.
Higher courts really respect the normal legal process and the decisions made by trial courts.
Right.
They're not going to interrupt things unless there's a clear and undeniable mistake.
Okay.
Second, it shows how hard it is to prove a presumption of prejudice.
Yeah.
Courts tend to believe that jury selection can effectively weed out bias.
Right.
And third, this case shows how important the specific facts of each case are.
Okay.
The type of crime, how much and what kind of publicity there was, and how the court views the community's response, judges weigh all of that differently when deciding whether to move a trial.
Yeah.
This case is a really good example of the arguments for and against changing the venue when a case is so closely tied to a community's trauma and public opinion.
You know, it's interesting to think about other big cases where they did decide to change the venue.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that Tsarnaev's case was different from some others.
Yeah, it can be helpful to compare it to other high-profile cases.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, in the Oklahoma City bombing case, they moved Timothy McVeigh's trial from Oklahoma City to Denver.
Right.
And they did that specifically because of how much the bombing affected the people in Oklahoma City.
Right.
So when you compare that to Tsarnaev, where the trial stayed in Boston, it shows you that these decisions about the venue are really case by case.
Yeah.
They depend a lot on how the court views the specific circumstances.
So to wrap up this deep dive, we've seen this fundamental disagreement. The majority of the court trusting jury selection to ensure fairness, and then the dissenting opinion arguing that the bias in Boston from the marathon bombing was just too much to overcome.
Right.
And that brings us back to the big question we started with. Can you ever really guarantee impartiality in these highly emotional situations?
And that leads to a final thought for everyone listening.
Okay.
When the legal system relies on voir dire, even when a community has been through so much trauma and public opinion is so strong,
yeah.
Does that show a real dedication to the idea of impartial justice, a belief that people can put their emotions aside and reach a fair verdict based only on the evidence?
Yeah.
Or is it expecting too much from people to be objective, maybe even ignoring the lasting effects that collective trauma can have on how individuals judge things?
That's a really tough question.
It is.
No easy answer.
It's a really complex issue.
Yeah.
And we encourage you to keep thinking about the nuances and the challenges of balancing the right to a fair trial with the powerful forces of public opinion.